Oh my god.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 27. Trolls, Hacksaw Ridge, and brainstorming a brand new genre. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you had a good week. I saw a couple of films this week. I saw DreamWorks' animated film Trolls, which was really fun, and I saw Mel Gibson's first film in 10 years, Hacksaw Ridge, which I thought was fantastic. We'll be doing an analysis of those in this episode, along with brainstorming a brand new genre, which combines teen sex and fantasy. But first up, a bit of follow-up. As we will be discussing in this episode, we'll be talking about the Narrative First Genre Gist Collections, and these are exclusive to Narrative First members. So if you go to narrativefirst.com/membership and sign up, you will have access to these different genre collections. And for those of you who don't know what gists are, if you've ever seen Dramatica's story form and you've been completely lost as to the story elements and what exactly they're all about, the gists actually take those story elements and turn them into storytelling. So it's kind of like bridging the gap between story element, you know, between the Dramatica terminology and what you would actually end up writing. And it opens up all kinds of new ideas for creativity and for brainstorming, and makes Dramatica more digestible for a lot of people, even me included, who is really into Dramatica and knows all the different terminology and knows where all the different definitions. I find that working with the gists inspires different ideas and stories that I never would have thought of before. So starting last January, we started to create different gist collections for each month. We started out with fantasy, which is kind of like Lord of the Rings, sword and sorcery. Then we went to science fiction, did western, thriller. Our latest two are the teen sex and the war genres. And I just discovered something writing the article this week that if you actually access them, because they've been up actually for about a month now, I just haven't put out the broadcast yet for the monthly newsletter. If you have access to them, you'll want to go back and re-download them, because there was actually an error in the way that they were constructed, so that one gist actually had 60,000 different terms within that one story point, and that's not actually how they work. So I've actually gone in and fixed them, and they both have approximately 100,000 to 120,000 different gists each, and they only go down through the domain and the concern. I have gotten an email where somebody was asking, you know, why doesn't it go all the way down? And because of the vast amount of different story points that you can possibly have, for this first round, for this first year in 2016, we're just doing the domains and the concerns, which also extends to signposts and to the static plot points, because it's the type level where most of plot is. I wonder if going down further would make it more difficult, because I realize when I'm working with the gists and with these genre gists that the more definite the gist is, the more constricting it almost feels. And I wonder, I'll try it out for the fantasy collection, but I wonder if going down to the problem, solution, symptom, and response might actually make it almost too definite, too defined, and doesn't leave it up, or, you know, doesn't leave it open to interpretation. But it'll be worth checking out. But if you have downloaded the teen sex or the war gists in the last month, you're going to want to go back into your membership account and re-download those. And if you are a Narrative First monthly member, you will be getting a monthly newsletter, which hasn't been out since June, where I clear up all the different technicalities that go in with downloading these gists. The problem with them is I don't believe Dramatica was constructed or designed to take 200,000, 300,000 gists at once. The different gist collections are divided up into the different domains. So like the fantasy gist collection will have fantasy situation, fantasy fixed attitude, fantasy mind, or I'm sorry, fantasy activity, and fantasy psychology. And when you install one of them, you know, the activity one can sometimes have close to 60,000 different gists. And if you install that, it's gonna, the beach ball is gonna come up and spin. And I should also mention too, if you have a PC, the PC version of Dramatica does not have the gist feature in it yet. So this is only for Mac users. So yes, if you install them, you're gonna get the spinning beach ball, and you just kind of have to wait a couple minutes, and then it will install it and it will be there. But you also want to make sure that when you are done using Dramatica, you want to make sure you uninstall them, because otherwise when you boot up Dramatica again, it's going to go through and reinstall all those gists again. And again, that could take upwards of like 10 to 15 minutes before it actually works. But once you have them installed, then it's really great to use the brainstorming feature and to go through and to see what kind of stories you can come up with, which was what we did this week by combining I thought it'd be funny to combine the teen sex genre with the fantasy genre. And I came up with a strange story, but it strangely works. So it'll be interesting when we get there. Also, if you're a Narrative First member, the analysis pages will be different. So for those films that have complete story forms, if you're logged in with your account, which you'll be receiving an email soon about that. If you're logged in with your account, you'll be able to see the entire story form and be able to download the DR5 file so that you can install it in Dramatica directly. And you'll be able to see all the different story forms for all the complete stories that we found on the site. And a lot of these aren't on Dramatica.com. These are just story forms that I found. Like, definitely Hacksaw Ridge is not on there yet. Maybe someday, but right now it's not. A bunch, I think there's about 10 or 12 right now. And I'm going to go back in and redo all the ones that I've done previously. So you'll have access to those. And then the story forming series, I do have the two story forming episodes up, which involved Hunt for the Wilder People, and then the second one, which was about the Dark Horse. And then from now on, all the story forming series will be exclusively available to members. If you are a subscriber, then you'll be able to get the next story forming series. And I believe the next one will be Hacksaw Ridge, because it's really interesting how I was able to come up with a story form within 5 or 10 minutes. I mean, it's a pretty common story form, so if you've been in and around Dramatica, and you know, if you watch the trailer for the film, you know, you've seen it before, you've seen it a million times. It's really well done, and it's great how all the different pieces fall into place once you choose, you know, a couple different story points, and then the rest of the story form falls into place. So be on the lookout for that. So that does it for follow-up, and now on to the analyses. First film I want to talk about is Trolls, which is the DreamWorks animated film. If you don't know, I worked at DreamWorks as an animator for 14 years, and I really enjoyed working on Shrek 2 because it had a great story, and I really enjoyed working on How to Train Your Dragon because it had an amazing story, but pretty much everything in between was not so great and didn't have a great story. And unfortunately, Trolls is in the same place. The animation is superb, the music is awesome, but unfortunately, the storytelling is all over the place. You know, if you know about the concern within a through line, the overall story concern starts out in Innermost Desires. And it seems like, oh, all right, well, we're going to focus on a concern of getting the king happy or being happy, finding your happy place, which I thought was really great, really interesting, and really different. But then, because that's a very sophisticated story concern, especially for an animated film, it devolves really quickly into an obtaining story. You know, oh my god, bunch of trolls go missing and they have to go rescue them. So then the overall story concern is now obtaining. And the obtaining story goes on for a while until it devolves into playing a role where the scullery maid, they help dress her up and she puts on a whole act so that she can make the king fall in love with her. So these aren't even like requirements or prerequisites that are being put into play, you know, leading up to the goal, because these are in completely different locations. You know, at least Innermost Desires and Obtaining are in the lower left corner, the lower left quad of Dramatica, but playing a role is in the upper right, and then eventually it comes back to Innermost Desires at the end. So it's all over the place structurally, and so what happens is it feels very episodic, and then it just feels like a bunch of animated music videos. So the music's great, and you know, the animation again is fantastic, but because the storytelling is all over the place, it feels like, you know, like a compilation of music videos. And unfortunately, there's only a little bit of character development in there. I mean, it's really clear Steadfast main character, the Anna Kendrick character, and then Timberlake's going to be the changed resolve. And there's a nice little area where she kind of gives up, you know, so her steadfastness isn't completely blind and completely just 100% one way. But still, even with that, their concerns and their individual personal issues aren't quite defined, and they don't really mesh very well together. They try to keep it all together with, you know, this concern of happiness, of finding your happy place. And, you know, the film is fun, and it's great to see, especially if you have kids. But just don't go in there expecting to be convinced that finding your happy place is within. I mean, the whole point of narrative, of a complete narrative, a functional narrative, is to argue a particular point of view. In Dramatica, they call it a grand argument story. So you use the four through lines, main character, influence character, their relationship, and the overall story, and you look at the character, plot, theme, and genre in each of those through lines, and they mesh together to convince an audience of the author's message, their point of view, what they're trying to argue. And when you don't have that argument in there, when it's not fully formed, then the message that's trying to get across can easily be discounted. And it's just like, there's lots of times when finding your happy place, you can't find that within. And you can do that after the film. It's not like you're actually convinced of it. As opposed to a film like Hacksaw Ridge, which has an extremely functional narrative and gets its point across with sophistication and grace. So Hacksaw Ridge is Mel Gibson's first film in, I believe, 10 years, and it's built on a very solid structure and tells a very compelling and convincing argument. It has all four through lines. You have the main character through line, which is Desmond Doss, played by Andrew Garfield, and he is the Seventh-day Adventist conscientious objector. They call him Private Beanstalk because he's thin as rails, and he sits up in situation. So his through line is a situation, basically his physicality, and of course, his religion. And directly across from him are the influence characters. Now, this is a lot like Stalag 17, where in that film there was a singular influence character and a collective main character. So this is the same sort of thing, but instead of, you know, a collective main character, this is a singular main character, which is Desmond Doss, and then a collective influence character, and the role of the influence character gets handed off, much like the ghosts in A Christmas Carol. So everybody from Vince Vaughn's character, Sergeant Howell, to Sam Worthington's character as Captain Glover, and Luke Bracey's character as Smitty, those three are the key players who challenge Desmond's way of seeing things, and they have a fixed attitude. They're very set in their ways, and can't imagine anybody thinking any other way. And that fixed attitude is what challenges Desmond to come out of his beliefs and to kind of throw them aside. And the two of them, not the two of them, because there's actually more than one, but the relationship between Desmond and the other soldiers, you know, your fellow man in the foxhole, that kind of thing, is an argument over a manner of thinking. So that's in the lower left, that's in psychology, and that's where their conflict is. And then, of course, the overall story through line, which is taking back Hacksaw Ridge, which is Okinawa in May of 1945, that's in activity, which you would expect a war film to have that set up. So you have Desmond in situation, you have the influence characters in fixed attitude, you have their argument over, you know, whether or not it's right to be a conscientious objector, that's in manner of thinking or manipulation, and the overall story is in activity. It was really interesting when I was coming up with a story form for this. I was pretty certain that his concern, Desmond's concern, was going to be in future, because he was always worried about, well, if I give in and to what everybody's saying, you know, what kind of a man am I going to be? How can I live with myself? So that's very much a concern of the future. In future, you have issues of openness, preconception, delay, and choice. And, of course, preconception, I mean, that it's his beliefs. That's what he... his biggest issue is, you know, he creates problems for himself because of preconception. And within preconception, you find help. So right away, I mean, even in my head, even before I even opened Dramatic or even looked at the table of story elements, I thought, well, you know what? His drive as the steadfast character, that'll be his problem, has to be help. Once you set that as help, as the main character problem, the symptom and response will be controlled, uncontrolled. And then so when you go over into the overall story and you do control, uncontrolled, you see the overall story problem will be pursuit, and the solution will be avoidance. And right there, it's like, okay, well, that's the entire story right there, because it's the pursuit, you know, the relentless pursuit against the enemy, and it isn't until they want a piece of what Desmond is doing. You know, even when they're, you know, holding off to go up the hill because they're waiting for Desmond to pray, that's definitely an influence character's solution of avoidance. And when you set all those points in there, the really great thing is it sets the relationship story problem to conscience. So if you have a conscientious objector and he's having issues with his fellow soldiers, it would make sense that the relationship story problem is conscience. And of course, temptation at the end, which actually you can kind of see that with Desmond, because their final attack is on a Saturday, and he says in the beginning that he refuses to fight on a Saturday. Well, he's actually willing to forego that and kind of give in to temptation a little bit. So there's temptation on both sides. They kind of meet in the middle. It's not like he actually changes. I mean, he still believes what he believes, and, you know, the praying kind of works his way through that. But it's just really interesting, and it's amazing at how quickly I was able to come up with the story form for this story, because it's a very familiar set of narrative dynamics that are in there. The obtaining future innermost desires and changing one's nature, those concerns, are very familiar concerns, especially when it comes to war movies. Especially those movies in the mid-20th century, they frequently deal with that kind of stuff. Pursuit and avoidance, control and uncontrolled, conscience and temptation. Those are the kind of the base elements that they usually deal with. And the film does a great job of it. So, you know, he remains steadfast. The influence characters, they change. They succeed in taking back the ridge. And of course, it's all shown to be a story judgment of good, particularly with the news footage afterwards of him reuniting with Captain Glover. And I believe it's Captain Glover, him reuniting with his soldiers afterwards, you know, on news programs. And there's just a very positive message to that. So it's interesting to contrast Trolls with Hacksaw Ridge, because Trolls is a very broken narrative and Hacksaw Ridge is a very functional narrative. I believe the reason why it probably isn't, you know, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, or why people don't think it's the greatest thing in the world, is because it does cover familiar territory, but it does cover that familiar territory in a very effective and sophisticated manner. Like it's very, very clear storytelling, and it's great how you get to learn about how he developed the justifications for why he has those convictions. And of course, Gibson always does a great job with that. So definitely, you know, if you want to have fun, you can go see Trolls and laugh and have a great time. If you want to be, I guess not entertained, but if you want to be moved and see something meaningful and actually be convinced that staying true to your convictions can actually end up changing the world around you for good, then definitely go see Hacksaw Ridge. Just give a brief overview of the article for this week, which is all about brainstorming a brand new genre for NaNoWriMo. Like I said last week, this is November National Novel Writing Month. I always want to say National November Writing Month, but I don't think that's right. National Novel Writing Month, where you're supposed to write a 50,000 word novel in 30 days, which is great. 1,700 words a day, you could easily do it. And last week came up with a brand new Western that combined kind of occult influences with the Western. And this week, I thought it'd be great to combine the teen sex and fantasy genre. And it came to mind the film Your Highness, which I had high hopes for because I love Danny McBride and Eastbound and Down. The structure was so bad. Like, it was just so incomplete. The influence character didn't show up, Natalie Portman, until an hour into it. And her issues didn't match up. The seamless matching up between Desmond and the other soldiers, that did not exist at all in Your Highness. And so I thought it'd be interesting to combine the two. And so I installed both the teen sex genre gist collection and the fantasy genre gist collection, and I spun a new narrative in Dramatica. You can go into the brainstorming section and just hit spin, and it'll come up with a new version of it. And I go back in and explain how powerful the gists are. you know, a film I'm working on now, the main character, his domain is fixed attitude, his concern is impulsive responses, and his problem is process. And so my character has a problem of process, like what exactly does that mean? And so I spun it using just the standard GIST collections, and it came up with a domain of fearing crowds, a concern of being rash about something, and a problem of hating an overly complicated process. So you can start to get a better idea of what is actually going on within this character. You can imagine a character who, you know, actually needs to learn how to go through the motions, but is so impatient and hasty that he often makes the wrong decision. So somebody who hates an overly complicated process and hates going through the motions, but that kind of creates problems for them. And then once they embrace the results of it or actually try and make those results happen, make something happen that gets them over that problem of hating going through the motions. And then that gives you a better idea of how to form your story. And then, of course, if that doesn't quite fit for you, you can spin another one and do it again. So for the story this week, you know, well, like I said, I turned on the teen sex and the fantasy genres. And first I set it for the typical settings for a boys movie. You know, I put the main character resolve steadfast, because most stoner-type movies or people who are into that culture don't do a whole lot of character growth. They don't do a lot of changing. They prefer everybody else around them to change. So I figured I made the main character resolve steadfast. I set linear problem-solving style because there's no way any guy is going to go see a movie with a holistic problem-solving style. But a doer approach, story limit of time lock, because why not? You know, it'll just reinforce that frat boy mindset. I put the story driver to action, outcome and judgment to success, good, because you want a triumphant ending, and the overall story through line to activity, because I don't want to get into, like, last week when we had the overall story through line into fixed attitude. And then I spun it, and I got a pretty crazy story form. I actually tried 3 or 4 different ones, and the one I came up with was the closest, just because I thought the goal was funny. And it, you know, it was kind of like the user group that we do in December, where it starts out and you have no idea how this is all going to work together. But underneath all those gists is the story form, and the story form holds it all together. And so I went through and just brainstormed over a couple hours different storytelling based on that story form. And I think what actually ended up coming together, it probably could be funnier for sure. It probably could have a little bit more fantasy in it. But I think what came out of it actually holds together and tells a convincing story. And, you know, I'll leave a link to the show notes to this week's article. And again, John Gentry, who's one of our story consultants, he actually created the teen sex genre GIST collection, which is really funny, some of the stuff that he put in here. The main character through line came up with a domain of being stranded in the liquor store, a concern of being current about the scene kids, an issue of being repelled by something, and a problem of being likely. Okay, so I just said that Thaddeus, no longer a prince, you know, I just use the same names from Your Highness, is stuck running his father's tavern for the weekend, right? So instead of a liquor store, I turned it into a tavern. Obsessed with staying current with the cool kids in the village to the point of being creepy. Figure he's 43, so I can relate to that. He kicks anyone out who even remotely drags down the reputation of the place or looks like trouble. In short, he's the kind of person who would rather be safe than sorry, even if it means kicking out older patrons he knows could hook him up with drugs or a date with an older woman, just so that he can look cool in front of the other kids. I could see Danny McBride doing that character. It just made me laugh. I thought it was funny. Going on to the influence character through line, I had no idea how these two were going to connect together. You know, the you and I are both alike moment. If you haven't seen that video, I'll leave a link in the show notes. It had a domain of having biases for a princess, a concern of thinking seriously about a daddy's princess, which is funny because those are randomly selected and they fit really well together. An issue of reconsidering past decisions. Oh, I actually didn't put that in my article. Oh, that's funny. That would actually work really well. A problem of using deductive reasoning on a particular group. So in my article, I just focused on domain, concern, and problem. And I said Isabel, which is the Natalie Portman character's name, operates from a similar place of needing validation from others with her obsession for the king's daughters. So while Thaddeus's need for validation is all about, you know, his reputation and looking cool in front of everybody, hers is because of her obsession for the king's daughters. You know, she wants that validation from them. And I figure you make her lesbian, then that, of course, will attract more of the intended audience. While everyone mocks and disregards the airheaded ramblings of the king's spoiled princesses, Isabel gives them the respect they deserve, even to the point of getting into a physical altercation with Thaddeus when he refuses to let them into his tavern. If they're hot and they're rich and they're single and available for marriage, they're worth everyone's attention and worth fighting for. So that is the using deductive reasoning, and it creates problems for her because it's like, you know, just because of all those things doesn't mean they're worth giving your attention to. but she's obsessed with him. She can't help it. And then I looked at the signpost just to kind of see what her growth is, because she ends up being the change character, right? Because he's the steadfast character. So signpost 1, having a phobia about the sorority girl. Signpost 2, thinking seriously about the diaphragm. Signpost 3, forgetting the babysitter's first date. And signpost 4, having knee-jerk reactions to the perverts. So, and that she's the change character. So we know she starts out the story deathly afraid of sorority girls. So maybe even though they're more conscientious and thoughtful when compared to the king's daughters, you know, she just has a complete fear of them. And her defense of them leads her to completely ignore the her defense of the princesses leads her to completely ignore the diaphragm found in their chambers. And this, of course, indicates that the king's daughters do not share Isabel's sexual preference. And it finds her embarrassed when the daughters completely forget their planned playdate with Isabel, another sign that they're not interested in her at all, the day she was supposed to babysit their nephew. Crushed and influenced heavily by Thaddeus and his better safe than sorry angle, Isabel changes her worldview by conjecturing that the princesses are perverts and don't want their daddy to know how sexually active they are. She would have seen it earlier if she hadn't been so caught up in all the glitz and glamour of the rich and beautiful, but now she sees them for who they truly are, and she gets hired to forget about them with Thaddeus, of course. That would be more like a denouement. It's actually now part of the story form. So then their relationship. Isabel gets to that character-defining moment because of her relationship with Thaddeus. And I figured a mentor-mentee relationship, you know, kind of making fun of the Luke and Yoda or Neo and Morpheus. And the domain was being troublesome in the police station. The concern was being inspired by the AAA and the problem of being idle and the solution of protecting. So here Thaddeus teaches and manipulates Isabel to become a troublesome nuisance to the local magistrate. You know, instead of the police station, now we're keeping it in the fantasy genre. So how else to make sure that he remains distracted enough, long enough, to overlook the seedy but ever so popular activities at Thaddeus' place? Inspired by the coolest kid to ever walk these lands would be the AAA halfling, you know, like the Hobbit. Both Thaddeus and Isabel find common ground over their idle and lackadaisical ways, which is the problem of being idle. And in a relationship, the problem is what brings them together and kind of drives their relationship forward. So they're both slackers. Essentially, neither is willing to lift a finger for the other. Their hipster laziness pulls them together and drives their relationship forward. In the end, they'll come together when they start looking out for each other and covering each other's back. That feels great. The overall story through line, instead of looking at the actual overall story through line itself, I looked at the static plot point appreciations because that's actually why I chose the story form. And it was the goal of finding out about the condom and the consequence of getting the idea that the daddy's princesses is hated. Which is, again, this is completely random, but it fits in perfectly with the influence character through line story points. So as protagonist, Thaddeus will be driven to find out who the condom he found in his tavern belongs to. Was it a cool kid, a degenerate halfling thief, or maybe even Isabel herself? The truth is it belonged to the king's daughter, or at least to the king's daughter's boyfriend, who refused to get her pregnant because he didn't want to have children with her, which is the consequence of getting the idea that today's princess is hated. The king's daughter wants to marry her boyfriend, but if her father were ever to find out, it would be curtains for him. So Isabel, smitten by the princesses, promises to make sure no one ever finds out, and this puts her in direct conflict with the very loud and obnoxious Thaddeus. And then we have the requirements and prerequisites, understanding the geek's limitations and outdoing a peeping Tom by skillful planning. And I give ideas as to how that would develop in the story. And then, of course, the forewarning, which is the forewarning that the consequence is going to happen. The Count's horse having a past. The disturbing and well-known sordid past of the Count's horse only makes it more certain that the king will eventually find out what happened with his daughter. After all, her boyfriend is the Count's son. And if he was willing to wear a condom with his father's horse, there's no telling what he would do with the king's beautiful princess. Okay, so I got a little bit off the rails there. Hopefully this isn't too offensive, but I mean, that's kind of the genre that I was going for. Regardless of how troubling that forewarning story point turned out to be, you can kind of see that the story is actually being held together. And again, I talk about how it's the same kind of feeling that happens in the dramatic users group. So you may not like a sex and sorcery film about finding the owner of a condom, and you don't think it would find a large enough audience, but if you were to continue to flesh out this story form, the end result would be a complete and meaningful narrative. Thaddeus finds the owner of that condom because Isabel finally gives up her obsession for the princess long enough to hypothesize that they didn't want their daddy to know they were straight. Like, she was just using deduction the whole time, and then finally, because of Thaddeus' influence, she starts using induction, and that's when they're actually able to figure out who the condom belongs to. That solution cuts quick to the chase and right through to Isabel's character flaw and works exceedingly well with the main plot line because all these story points balance each other out. Her conjecturing led to finding out who owned the condom, and that conjecturing came about because of Thaddeus' success with playing it safe than sorry, which is exactly what the Count's son was doing. playing it safe rather than sorry. So by combining the genre of teen sex with fantasy, we came up with a story unlike any other on the planet. We have a stoner stuck in his dad's tavern for the weekend, intent on learning the identity of a condom's owner. The mentorship he strikes up with the local tomboy teaches them both the importance of looking out for each other when dealing with people in positions of power and authority. And finally, we show that a healthy dose of paranoid speculation, amplified by certain drug use, can keep us all from looking like fools. It's insane, but insanely effective in terms of story structure and meaningful narrative. Now all it needs is a heaping serving of comedic storytelling, and that's when you bring it into the story room. Everybody goes bananas on it to make it an enjoyable and memorable experience. So again, the teen sex and fantasy genres only begin to scratch the surface. With the narrative first genre gist collections, authors can combine all sorts of different and disparate genres to challenge and inspire themselves to write something wholly brand new. NaNoWriMo is about writing that story that didn't exist in October. Now write that story in a genre that no one expects, and you will have truly made an amazing story. That's it for this week's Narrative First podcast. If you have any questions about anything, please write to us at narrativefirst.com/contact. Again, if you want to get those genre gist collections, go to narrativefirst.com/membership and sign up for membership. Hope you have a great week of writing, and we will see you next week.